Have Alyssa Harris on the line from the Watershed Post. Alyssa, can you hear us now?
I can. How you doing, Tom?
I'm doing okay. We can hear you now, too.
Great.
Alyssa, first, I guess, tell our listeners, what is the Watershed Post?
The Watershed Post is an online news site. It's at watershedpost.com. And we cover the Catskills and the New York City watershed. It's about a five-county area. And so we do a mix of original news reporting and linking to interesting news stories from around the region and from downstate media when they venture up here to talk about what we have going on. So that's us.
And what was the what counties do you cover first?
We cover Greene, which is you guys' territory, Sullivan, Ulster, Delaware, and Schoharie counties.
And we our signal reaches a little bit into Delaware and Schoharie and Ulster, little slivers, I think. Tell us what was the media landscape like before you guys started there? Who was covering things?
It's a funny area because there's actually a lot of newspapers around here, but most of them are little weeklies for one or two towns. It's an area that the daily newspapers don't really cover much except as an afterthought to their more urban regions. There's daily papers kind of scattered around the edges of our territory you guys over in Catskill are lucky to have one. But most of our territory is very rural and, doesn't get a whole lot of daily news coverage. And some places don't even have a weekly paper. So, there really isn't one media outlet that covers the Catskills, or there wasn't until we got here. And we've watched a kind of media renaissance happening with online and also with radio. You guys and WIOX started up since we arrived here about 2 years ago, and more people are blogging and jumping into online media, and so it's really cool.
And WRIP is out in Stamford now too, in Delaware County. There's a couple other little
WRIP has been around for a while, but WIOX is one of the new ones.
Right, I meant their new translator, WRIP.
Oh, WRIP added a new transmitter, so they have more territory now than they used to. It's really cool to watch that even as print is kind of struggling and trying to find its way, that other media outlets are cropping up.
And what year did you guys start?
We started building the website in 2009. We launched it in January 2010. And it turned out to be pretty good timing because in 2010, we got some coverage of some more minor floods under our belt, and then when Irene hit, we were as ready as we were ever going to be to do live news coverage of disaster situations, and that was pretty intense.
And you super established your presence in the Catskills through your coverage of Hurricane Irene and the storms associated with what became Tropical Storm Irene, and then the other Tropical Storm Lee that followed a week later.
That was a really challenging thing for all the media outlets around here to cover because there were widespread communication failures across the territory. We had people calling us from CNN and NBC and downstate saying, hey, we want to send reporters up there. Where can we send them? And we're saying, hey, all the roads are closed. Sorry, the thruway is closed. good luck getting up here if you don't have a helicopter. So, it was really tough.
So how did you work around some of those physical, literal physical obstacles?
Well, we honestly stayed put for most of the time in our apartment in Andes, which magically never lost power or internet. Which we expected it to. We expected our internet connection to go down, and so before the flooding really got underway, when we knew it was coming in and it might be bad, we started reaching out to other reporters and people that we knew in the area that we thought were conscientious and would be good news gatherers to help keep a live blog running during the storm in the event that we lost power. And a bunch of those people stepped up to help us get news and publish it, but we never lost power, so we were able to be there the whole time as well, and it just sort of snowballed into this massive collaborative news-gathering effort between professional journalists and ordinary citizens who were stopping by our live blog because it was really the only live source of flooding news. We had a GIS professional who helped us create a live map of road closures.
And what is GIS for?
GIS is Geographic Information System. So this is a guy that does consulting on computer maps for little towns around here, and he noticed that we were trying to pull together some information on road stuff, and he was, this was his field of expertise, so he pitched in on the spot, and we were gathering information from people about what roads were closed, and he was putting them on a live map. So that was, it was kind of amazing to see people like that, who we'd never met before, pitch in to help us out.
And if you just tuned in, we're talking to Lissa Harris from the Watershed Post, a blog that covers all the Catskills, and it's also WGXC's pledge drive. So if you'd like to call in and donate to keep this kind of local news on the air, the numbers are 518-697-7400 and 518-291-WGXC. That's 518-697-7400 or 518-291-WGXC. So, Lissa, you guys were literally talking to somebody down the street who had never written a newspaper article or talked on the radio or anything. They were contributing, as well as you had, like, professional reporters at the Daily Freeman were chiming in.
Absolutely, yes. Yvonne Lahara at the Daily Freeman was fantastic. He was helping us build spreadsheets of stranded people and places to donate supplies, and we were
working together to
verify some of the donation sites that cropped up overnight, some of which were legit and, you know, some of which were not. So we had to weed those out.
Doran at the Daily Mail, I think, was chiming in, too.
Absolutely. Doran Tyler Antrim at the Daily Mail was on Twitter. We were trading info with him. There were a lot of reporters that we were kind of working with to figure out what was happening in the region. The Liberty Indy, which is another little online news outlet down in Sullivan County, was pitching in as well. I can't possibly name all the people that helped to gather flood coverage in our live blog. There were so many of them. There were hundreds of people.
I guess you started working with Andrea at that point, too? Is that?
Yes.
should we want to tell that story?
Yeah, Andrea Girolamo is now our managing editor. She was somebody that I had... I think I had an email with her before the flood. She said, "Hey, I like your site. I'd like to write for it." And I said, "Great, let's get together sometime." And I think the next week the flood hit. So washed our lunch plans away. But she was one of the people that volunteered to be a moderator on the live blog because it wasn't one of these things. It wasn't like a chat room that just runs itself. It had to be actively moderated by people who were making sure that there weren't scammers cropping up, that there wasn't, that people were kind of behaving themselves, and to try and do a little bit of verifying of information that people were giving out, and also to debunk some rumors. There were rumors flying around that the Gilboa Dam had failed, which would have been catastrophic, and some of the actual major news outlets were reporting this as a fact, and it had not happened. So, you know, we needed moderators to help kind of, keep the misinformation down.
So the most important thing besides giving people, like, live real-time information was the vetting that live real-time information, because
immediately... Which, honestly, we could not do all of. We couldn't...
Right, and you were crowdsourcing that vetting.
Yes.
So,
people began to kind of behave that way themselves. Like, they began to, you know, to talk amongst themselves and to share information in this really incredible way. When you challenge people, when there's something really disastrous going on, you see this kind of, I think people become amazingly good. And then the minute the crisis passes, they kind of get back to arguing and that sort of thing again. But we really didn't see a whole lot of that during the flood. We saw was overwhelmingly people stepping up to help each other.
We've all played the childhood game of telephone, is when somebody tells a story and it or goes around the room. Is it called telephone? Or what? You know, when you tell a story and the next person tells it to the next person and the next person, mm-hmm. and by the time it gets to the last person, it's a completely different story.
Absolutely.
So in the immediate aftermath, that's what was going on, is that somebody was telling somebody something, and then so by the time it got to the Daily Freeman or the Daily Mail or the Watershed Post, who knows, you know, what state it was in.
Well, and we were seeing this from even officials, too. You know, we were posting press releases from quote-unquote official sources of information that turned out not to be right. That happened a couple of times. So the ordinary rules for vetting information really went out the window because the official sources of information were so difficult to reach, and everything was very chaotic for them as well. There were very fast-changing things happening on the ground. They had a lot of emergency first responders in the field, and they were getting conflicting messages from different levels of government. So it was just a really tough situation, and we were doing this balancing act between getting as much information out there as quickly as possible and making sure that that information was true.
And then, and that was just like during the chaos of the storm. How soon did?
We went on a long time, by the way.
Yeah,
the
that's
chaos
true.
During the storm, we kept that live blog running for I think 12 days. I forget exactly how many days.
The second storm came like 8 days later, right?
Sure. Just as we were about to shut down the live blog and as everything was slowly returning back to normal, that's when Lee hit, and everyone just went, "Oh my God." I can't do this anymore. Oh, we can. We have to. It was very chaotic for a long time.
And
you guys know as well. You were doing your own.
Well, WGXC was off the air initially with we don't have a backup generator, which is another reason that you might want to call 518-697-7400 or 518-291-WGXC.
That is a noble cause. We backup generator.
We were off because of the electricity at the transmitter site being off for the first. I don't think it was 48 hours, but it was probably 36 hours or something like that.
So you were streaming live on the internet, right?
Right, because we still had. Power and did we have internet? I think we were still streaming on the internet.
I feel like we did an interview with you guys at one point.
Just on the internet. I think you're right. Yes, I think you're right. I think we were back on the internet within 10 hours of the storm or something. I think we were off completely on the Sunday, and then yes, we were just internet only on the Monday, and then by the Tuesday we were back on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And then. And then we went to continuous coverage as much as we could at that point, too. It was chaos all that week, and you couldn't get around Greene County to even cover things. I remember, I think Paul Smart drove around on the Tuesday, the first day that we were back on the air, and getting to as close into the different towns where things were going as you could get, but you couldn't even get, you couldn't get to Prattsville.
It was incredibly challenging to get around. We didn't even try until maybe 5 days after. Excuse me, there's just a beep on my phone right here. but Julia, I believe it was the Wednesday after the flood, got taken on an ATV tour of some of the parts of Shandaken that had been really badly flooded. The 50-foot gulch that had been carved into a road in part of Shandaken that you couldn't see unless you were with first responders. So we got some video out of that area, and that was the first time that we even left left the house, really, because Route 28 was shut down. There was no way that you could get around.
And what was this ATV team? How did you get hooked up with?
Actually, the supervisor of Shandaken, Rob Stanley, hooked us up with that. He wanted people to see what was happening and what emergency first responders were dealing with on the ground, and it was an incredible situation. There were people stranded up Oliveria Road that had been there for days. There was an entire wedding party up there at the Full Moon Resort, and a bunch of people who lived up there who were just, doing what they could to go on with their lives, given the fact that they were cut off from the outside world. And we, Julia interviewed some of those people and took some video, and had that up on the site later that day, but that was just amazing.
And that was the same day you talked to Governor Cuomo?
I don't remember if it was the same day or not. Actually, I think it was.
I think it was that show. I remember that show that it was part of the show was the ATV tour, and then part of the show was that Governor Cuomo popped in live.
We were doing a show, I was patched in to the studio from my desk at home.
A radio show on WIOX and WGXC. Yes.
Right.
We didn't say that, yeah.
We were recording the show usually over at WIOX, but we couldn't get there, so they had me on the phone from my house, and we were having all sorts of technical problems with the show. And at the very last minute, Julia gets in from Shandaken and immediately a volunteer in Margaretville tracks down Governor Cuomo, who's wandering down Main Street, and presses a phone into his hand and says, "Hey, you know, talk to the Watershed Post on the radio." And she interviewed him on the spot. That was just a very lucky thing that we got that. But that was an incredible show.
But you also got to ask questions to the governor from the point of view of the counties that you are, you know, kind of representing in your news coverage. So
he doesn't make it up here that often, and when he does, it's usually bad. So
you know,
it was good to get the chance to grill him a little bit about that.
I think I got a chance in Catskill to shout one question at him once that he answered the softball kind of part of it and not the heart, you know, and totally skipped what I was actually, you know. You actually got to spend a couple minutes with him and ask him a couple questions.
I think Julie asked him about the wisdom of rebuilding in floodplains, which is a very tough question around here and continues to be a tough question. And, I don't think he said anything earth-shattering, but it's not something
that... Has anyone answered that question yet?
I if somebody does, call me, because I want to know.
And the question is because the floodplains have the richest soil because they are floodplains, and so the farmers want to be on them, and then their farms get wiped out.
All the towns in all these towns in the watershed, in the New York City watershed, are built around river valleys, and that's where the villages were built. And to kind of complicate that, New York City buys a lot of land in the region.
A lot of buying right now, last year or two.
Yeah, conservation, and a lot of that is the higher elevation lands. Where the city has been prevented from buying land are in the villages. And the villages are a lot of, there's a lot of territory in the villages that's in the floodplains. So you have entire towns and centers of commerce and main streets. Margaretville's a really good example that have, the life of the town is in the floodplain. What do you do about that? You can't just, say, okay, Margaretville, go up the hill now. That's not going to happen. But they are talking now about doing buyouts of some of this land that's in the floodplain, and about shifting some of this New York City land acquisition funding to do buyouts of some of that property. But it's just such a hard and very politically fraught topic to bring up. So we're going to be keeping an eye on that as it unfolds.
And that's kind of a microcosm for the whole planet's problem right now. What percentage of the planet lives in a floodplain or on a coastal area that's going to be facing rising waters in the next...
Those areas are shifting. The floodplains now are not the same as they were 100 years ago or even 50 years ago.
Well, to credit global warming, the people living on the coasts are going to have to move inward.
Sure. Yeah.
And so in the Catskills, it sounds like we have to move inward a little bit, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see how that plays out.
So I wanted to ask you, before you were talking about the... debunking rumors and then the scammers. How quickly did the con artists come to town?
There weren't a lot of con artists. There was one guy in particular that was saying that he was from a fire department. I want to say it's Prattsville, but
that seems to ring a bell with me too.
Got shut down pretty fast. With the help of the fire department, who said, we don't know this guy. And there were also some things that were, people sort of started collecting money in some cases without really having a plan. And, honestly, there was less outright scamming than I would have expected. But I think it helped that we were verifying these efforts and, we had a spreadsheet of relief efforts. And anybody that was asking for money, if we put down that they were asking for money, we would put a verified stamp on the spreadsheet so that people would know it was legit. And, we would identify who was behind it.
And
so,
again, you were using your crowdsourcing at that point for everyone, because you might not have known somebody who was organizing that charity in Prattsville, but somebody in Prattsville that you were working with
Right. We could call somebody in the community and say, hey, do you know these guys? There's a bank account fund started for them. Is this real? Is this, who is this? Who is this fund being run by? And we were able to verify a lot of that so that people could feel okay about donating to things that had kind of cropped up overnight.
And that
a lot of the stuff that cropped up overnight didn't have a website. It didn't have an organization behind it. Some of them did, but
and some organizations sprouted out of individual efforts in those weeks. That whole neighbors helping neighbors in Greene County is began from those couple days, right?
I don't know much about the origins of that particular group, but yeah, there were a bunch of groups that sprang up. There's Project Hope too in Ulster and Delaware County that has done a lot of flood relief work. There's been an effort in Schoharie where people have been going door to door and just recently, just like in the last month, to see what flood victims still need, because frankly there's a lot of people that still are homeless. There's a lot of people that are still putting their lives back together. It's not done.
What did you think of the government response to the crisis?
It seems like a really big question. There's so many levels of government, right? And we saw heroism on all of those levels. And we also saw incredible communication failures and, just things, that responses that didn't get underway in time. And it really was a very mixed bag.
Do you think that is any? Did the crisis spark any changes for the government? Are you seeing better?
I think people are talking now more about disaster response. Things are very slow to change, especially in small towns, and I don't know what kind of long-term changes are going to come out of this. I really hope that it will result in more energy being put toward, how do you get information out to people when there's a disaster? Because this is something that a lot of towns really didn't think too hard about, and they were confronted with it suddenly, and counties as well. I would love to see more towns and county governments embrace the Internet as a way to get information out, because it persisted in, when phone lines went down in a lot of places. People were able to access it. It's also a really, it's a quick way to get information out to the media, and the media can pass it on to citizens. I think just in general, there needs to be more thinking in all levels of government about disasters. How do you respond to them?
And I know you need to get back to the Watershed Post, but how did the crisis, Hurricane Irene, change the Watershed Post? That's an easier question for you, I guess.
It put us in the spotlight because it put the whole region in the spotlight. We had a lot of media interviews after the flood and during the flood, actually. Media outlets were interviewing us to find out what was happening here. And then there were very few sources of information. So that was, had a lot of people calling us and knocking on the door. And I think it also really cemented our place in the local community. We got Delaware County's New Business of the Year Award last year. And I couldn't believe it. We were at this ceremony, and our fellow honoree, which got the New Business of the Year, we got New Business of the Year, excuse me, was the Tractor Supply Store in Delhi. It was this big brick-and-mortar store that has, it's very visible on Main Street, employs a lot of people. And then there was us, and we were two people.
Do you guys have a sign outside?
No, not even. We work out of our house. We are,
there's no physical trace. There's no physical trace of the Watershed Post anywhere.
We're a startup. We have been very lean and mean since day one. So for us to be there, with this big box store that is so visible in the community and has so many employees, and these guys, forgive me, there's like Delaware County good old boys, all these business owners, and they stood up and gave us a standing ovation, and I almost burst into tears. It was amazing. And we're like, this is what we came here to do.
And so you feel like the blog and the web coverage has reached rural Catskills, that they're reading you as often as they're reading their weekly newspaper.
I hope so. I hope so. And absolutely. We're reaching people that that don't have cell phone service, that might not even have broadband, and they're reading us because we're talking about things that they care about. And if that's the case, then I think online news is going to be even more important when this region gets a little bit more wired.
And you want to give out the web address one more time for folks?
Absolutely. Watershedpost.com.
And what's up there? What stories are you covering today?
Let's see. I'm
keeping you from covering?
I have a couple of Sullivan County news posts up today. I'm working on a column from the captain of the Shandaken Ambulance Service. He writes a safety column called Staying Alive, and I'm working on editing that today. There's a police officer in Ulster County who died in a car accident in December, and the state police just announced on Sunday that he was drunk when the car crash happened. And so I'm working on a roundup of reactions to local news coverage of that, because the news coverage has prompted a huge, huge outcry from the community saying, you know, why are you covering this? It's 3 months later. People are really, really upset. So, you know, we comment a lot on what's happening in the local media, and that seems to be the media story of the week.
And that's another a great role that kind of is left to you. There's no one else really keeping the media kind of accountable in the area.
Media criticism in a rural area? Does anyone do this? We came here from Boston. I grew up in the Catskills, but I was a reporter in Boston for a long time, and so was Julia, the publisher. And there was a very robust media criticism scene. Papers were talking about each other, and it was something that they did. And to come up here and no paper will ever mention the name of another paper, it's weird.
Yes, some newspapers have policies against keep stringing the letters W, G, X, and C together in the paper.
So you've hit this as well, yeah. There's very much an attitude of, no, we're never going to mention another media outlet. And, you know, if they break a story, then we'll just re-report it and pretend that nobody else ever covered it. And I don't think it hurts you to say, when your competitor breaks a story ahead of you, hey, you know, they got this story first, and here's what they said, and here's what we have to add to it. So that's what we do constantly, is we're always sending people off of our website to look at other news websites. But, you know, the idea is that if we give people enough of what they want to see and are smart about what we cover, then they'll keep coming back to us because we're a central source of information for them.
All right. Well, that's a great way to end it. Lissa, thank you so much for calling. Lissa Harris with the Watershed Post. You can go to give it's watershedpost.com.